We've covered about 34 of the 39 books. And so we're almost to the end of the Old Testament. Of course, we're going to plow right on into the New Testament when we get done with the Old Testament. But we've been reviewing these books. And so let's go back to the beginning and review together the books of Genesis right up through the book of Habakkuk. All right, can you make that? Let's give it a try all together. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, Ruth, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings, 1 and 2 Chronicles, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, Daniel, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. Well, that's pretty good. Most of you are doing pretty well. So keep on reviewing over them. You'll have them down. You can find them just like that. Now, Habakkuk, that's quite a book. Can you pronounce it? How many of you think you can pronounce it? How many think you can spell it? Well, look, that really gets rough. And a lot of K's in there. Two in the middle and one on the end. It's kind of like the little girl that was going to spell banana, you know, B-A-N-A-N-A-N-A. And she says, I can spell it, I just don't know when to quit. Habakkuk is that kind of a book. It's not an easy word to say, and it's not an easy name to pronounce. And it's only three chapters long, but it covers some real basic principles. So let's look at this book of Habakkuk. It begins in chapter 1, verse 1, the burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. Now, Habakkuk was a prophet to Judah. He prophesied to Judah before the Babylonians came to destroy Judah. And it says this is a burden. Now, a burden, some of these prophets use the word the burden of this and the burden of that. That's just a heavy subject, you know. And when this is a kind of a dark and heavy and gloomy subject, the prophets referred to that as a burden. And this book of Habakkuk is dealing with Babylon and how Babylon is going to come and destroy Jerusalem, and then Babylon is going to be destroyed. Last week we looked at how God, through the prophet Nahum, God was going to destroy Nineveh. That was the capital of Assyria. Tonight, how God is going to destroy Babylon, the capital of the kingdom of Babylon. So, we'll look at this book. First of all, in this book, there's a problem or a question. And the question is, why are there so many bad things? I mean, why are there so many bad things in the world? Wars, and disease, and pestilence, and famine, and riots, and bad people. How come so many bad things and bad people? And then a second question goes along with it. Why do these bad people get by with it anyhow? Now, you ought to listen to this book because you'll have folk ask you that question. How come God lets so many awful things go on in the world? How come those bad people do all those terrible things and get by with it? Well, that's the question that occurs in this book. Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 2. The prophet says, O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save. He says, Lord, I'm bothered by all this violence and all this wickedness. What are you going to do about it? Verse 3, why dost thou show me iniquity, and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. The Lord, everywhere I look, there's troubles and problems, and people doing wicked things and violent things and killing each other and wars and all these troubles. Lord, how come I see so much of that? Why is that everywhere? Verse 4, therefore the law is slacked, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked is compass about the righteousness, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. almost sounds like he's talking about our society now, our days. How come, you know, the crooks get by with it and people don't get punished for their crimes and they get off after doing all these wicked things and the courts get everything all messed up, wrong judgment proceeds? Why is there all of this sort of thing anyway? Well, that's the question. And you could have people asking you the same questions today. Why do we have all these problems? Why are all those people in Haiti starving to death? Why is it that we have people abandoning babies on doorsteps and in trash cans? Why do people run around shooting innocent people? Why things like this soccer player that kicked the ball in the wrong goal so they shot him full of holes and killed him? You know, why in the world do things like that go on in this world anyway? And why is it that little babies suffer why so many bad people doing so many bad things? Why does God allow that anyway? Who are most of the wealthy and famous people? Well, not all. There's a lot of good people that are famous and good people that are wealthy. But, you know, there's an awful lot of wealthy, famous people that are just plain old bad people. How come bad people prosper and get rich and famous and they're scoundrels, corrupt, crooked, cheaters, and bribes and all that, and yet they seem to get by with it? And you see, that question bothered the prophet. He was concerned about that. He said, Lord, why do I see all this stuff going on around me? Why do I see all these bad people getting by with it? That's the same thing people are going to ask you. Sometimes you think about that yourself. It bothered the prophet. And the specific thing that bothered him was, up north and east of him was the nation of Babylon. And they'd conquered the Assyrians, and the Babylonians were starting to conquer this country, and eat up this country, and take over that country, and gobble up this country, and they kept getting closer to Judah. And the prophet Habakkuk knew there's only a matter of time they're going to march in here and get us too. Notice chapter 1, verse 6. God says, for lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that's the Babylonians, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. Here's these Babylonians marching in and taking over countries that don't belong to them. Verse 7, they are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Verse 9, they shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sand. They're just going around conquering people and taking away captives, many as the sand on the sea. Verse 10, and they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. These Babylonians, they didn't care how strong your walls were around your city. They'd tear them down and take over your country and slaughter your people and carry some away captives. You see, Habakkuk was saying, boy, that looks bad. How come that sort of thing goes on? Verse 11. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing this his power unto his God. Why, these Babylonians, they say it's their idol, their false god that's giving them all these victories. Might is their god. Verse 13. Habakkuk says to God, Lord, how can you put up with this? How can you tolerate this? Verse 13, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devoureth the man that is more righteous than he? He says, God, how can you stand this? How can you tolerate this? How can you put up with this when these people are doing all these wicked things? Now, Babylon, the Babylonians, they were bad people. They were proud. They were cruel. Babylon was the headquarters of all idolatry and astrology and sorcery. And here those people were coming in to march in and take over Judah. Now, Judah wasn't so good either. I mean, they were a long ways from God. But they weren't nearly as bad as the Babylonians. They were a little bit godly yet. And so he's saying, God, how can you tolerate for these wicked, awful, terrible people to march in and destroy us? We're bad, but we're not that bad. And they would overrun Judah and cause sufferings. And here the people of Israel would be suffering and tortured and killed and captured. And those really bad people in Babylon, they'd just be living it up. Says, God, doesn't seem fair. Doesn't seem right. Now, how come? Why? Notice that question. Go back to chapter 1, verse 3. Why dost thou show me iniquity? Chapter 1, verse 13. Wherefore, the middle of the verse, wherefore lookest upon them that deal treacherously? And sometimes, you know, we ask those kind of questions. You say, why is it, Lord, here I'm saved and I'm trying, I'm not perfect, and I'm not doing as good as I could or should, but I'm trying anyway, and I have all the trouble. And over there, there's that fellow, and he's a scoundrel, and he's fat, rich, and happy. And I'm the one who's trying to live for God, and I'm having all the trouble. And he's just doing wrong, and he's getting by with it. Lord, how can you allow that? Lord, I thought you were just. I thought you were fair. Well, you see, that's the question Habakkuk raised. And so that's the first theme of this book, that question. How come? Now, secondly, in this book you have the answer. The answer. Now, Habakkuk expected God to answer him. Notice chapter 2, verse 1. After he raises this question with God, he says, Lord, how come you allow this? How come all these bad things are going on? He says in chapter 2, verse 1, I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer him when I am reproved. He says, I've prayed and asked God these questions. And now I'm going to sit down here in my tower and I'm going to wait till God explains this to me. Do you expect God to explain things to you? Why is that? Why do we think that God should explain to us why He's doing what He's doing? Does God have to tell us why? Does God have to explain why the things that happen in your life happen? You know, God doesn't have to. God doesn't have to give us an answer. God isn't accountable to explain Himself to us. God doesn't have to tell you and me why He's doing what He's doing. Remember the book of Job? That was Job's problem. Lord, how come? How come the righteous suffer? How come I, who am trying to do good, am having all these troubles? Lord, explain that to me. And you go through all the 42 chapters of the book of Job and through all those arguments and discussions that they had. And you know, God never did explain that to Job. God never explained it to Job at all. And God doesn't have to explain things to us. Sometimes your parents deal with children that way. They say, well, why? Never mind why. Do what I tell you to do. You know? We don't always. Sometimes there's time to explain, and sometimes there's a time when we can't explain. Sometimes we know that the answer is more than they can understand anyway, so we don't bother trying. And sometimes God sees us that way. A lot of things we want to know, why, God, why are you doing this? And we wouldn't be smart enough to understand it if God explained it to us. And so God doesn't have to answer to us. God doesn't have to explain things to us. God can answer, but He doesn't have to, but He can. In Habakkuk's case, God did answer. He did explain a few things to him. And really, He gave a three-pronged answer. First of all, there was the immediate answer. Notice chapter 1, verse 12. He says, Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, mine Holy One? We shall not die, O Lord. Thou hast ordained them for judgment. And, O mighty God, Thou hast established them for correction. Habakkuk probably did some scripture reading and he caught on. The reason God was sending the Babylonians down there to judge Israel or to attack Israel and capture them was because of the sin of God's people. God had ordained them for judgment. They were sent there for correction. They were sent to bring the judgment of God, the chastisement of God upon Israel for their sins. You see, God can use evil people for judgment. In the day of Samson, God used the wicked Philistines to make judgment on Israel. In the days of Gideon, God used the wicked Midianites to bring judgment on Israel because of their idolatry. We saw last week in the days of the last days of the 10 northern tribes, God used the Assyrians, those awful people. God used them to bring judgment on Israel. And now God is using Babylon to bring judgment against Judah. God takes even wicked people and ordains them and uses them for judgment against God's people. Evil men, evil nations can be the whip in God's hands to chastise His people. Now, war is an awful thing. We all know that. Most of us don't know it as much as some because we haven't really experienced it. But war is an awful thing. Cities destroyed, people killed, fortunes lost, children maimed for life, families separated. But war is the judgment of God. God sends wars as judgments on nations for their sins. And in Habakkuk's case, the Babylonians, this invading army, was ordained by God to execute judgment against them. And so the immediate answer to Habakkuk's question is, Babylon is sent as a judgment from God upon Israel for your sins. That was the immediate answer. Then there was the long-range answer. And the long-range answer was this. Yes, I know that Babylon is a bad nation. I'm going to send them upon Judah for their sins, but someday I'm going to deal with Babylon too for their sins. And so in chapter 2 he enumerates the major sins of Babylon and their wickedness. Notice them. Chapter 2, verse 9. It says, woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. Here were the Babylonians. They were greedy. They wanted more land and more land. They wanted this country and this country and this country. Instead of being satisfied with what they had, they were greedy and wanting more. Sin. Verse 12. Woe to him that buildeth a town with blood and establisheth a city by iniquity. That's how Babylon was doing it. They were building their empire by going in and slaughtering people, killing them just to take over city after city and country after country. Sin in God's sight. Verse 15. Woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, that puttest thy bottle to him and makest him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. Drunkenness leading to immorality. Oh, that was true of Babylon as well, remember? Belshazzar's feast, when they were all sitting around there drunk, when the hand came out to write on the wall, that was Babylon. Drunkenness, immorality. Verse 19, woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Behold, it's laid over with gold and silver, and there's no breath at all in the midst of it. What's talking about? Idols. Dumb stone. Dumb piece of wood, take it and carve it and decorate it all up and cover it with gold or silver and say, oh, this is my God. Idolatry, God hates. And so, in chapter 2, verse 5, God condemns them for their sins. Notice he says, yea also, these Babylonians. Because he transgresseth by wine, he's a proud man, neither keepeth at home, who enlargeth his desire as hell, and is as death, and cannot be satisfied. You know, hell, death. Death is always after more people. Death has been getting people by the thousands and millions for years, but always wants more. He says that's the way Babylon is. Always after more. Greedy, trying to get more. And verse 6, shall not all these take up a parable against him and a taunting proverb against him and say, woe to him that increaseth that which is not his. How long unto him that ladeth himself with thick clay, shall they not rise up suddenly that shall bite thee, and awake that shall vex thee, and thou shalt be for booties unto them? Blessed, because thou hast spoiled many nations, all the remnants of the people shall spoil thee, because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land of the city, and of all them that dwell therein. What was God saying to Babylon? He was saying, judgment is coming to you too. Notice verse 17. For the violence of Lebanon shall cover thee, and the spoil of beasts, which made them afraid because of men's blood, and for the violence of the land of the city and of all that dwell therein. Oh, you're getting by with it for a while, but the time is coming when judgment is going to come upon Babylon. And of course, we know from history that that happened as well. They acted in violence. They were violent to all their neighbors around them. Eventually, that came back to haunt them. Violence was exercised upon them. Now, notice chapter 2, verse 20. There's a curious verse. A curious verse. Chapter 2, verse 20. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. What's that mean? Sometimes in some churches there's nothing wrong with it. That's a little tune that the organist plays before church service starts. Lord is in his holy temple, let all the earth keep silence. That means everybody shut up, stop talking, and get ready for church. That's what it means in the way it is used. What does it mean in this context? Well, the idea is, the Lord is ready to come and bring judgment. And they should keep silence in awe and in fear. It's kind of like a fifth grade classroom. Teacher steps out of the room for a couple minutes, has to run down to the office. Says, now you work on your arithmetic, I'll be back in a minute. And trust this doesn't happen in our school, but maybe it would. And everybody gets kind of rowdy, and somebody starts throwing something. And they throw something, a vase on the teacher's desk gets knocked over and crashes to the floor, smashes into 1,000 pieces. And just then they hear the teacher's steps come. Here she comes. And I will guarantee it's very quiet in that room. See? Quiet in awe. Judgment is coming. The teacher will soon be here, and we're going to catch it. That's the picture here. Let all the earth keep silence. God, the God of justice and judgment, is about to come out of his temple and bring judgment upon the Babylonians. See, Babylon may be a wicked people, and they may be used of God to bring judgment on Judah, but someday their turn is going to come, and judgment will fall upon them. And you keep that in mind as well. You see some wicked person or some wicked group, and they're doing all kinds of bad things and getting by with it. They're not going to get by with it forever. You know, the dope peddler, that contrary neighbor, that scoundrel at work. Don't you fret. They will get what they've got coming sooner or later. God will see to that. Be silent and wait. So, to this question, why does God allow these wicked people to do these things? There's the immediate answer. God is using them for judgment. There's the long-range answer. They're going to get it eventually. And then there is the ultimate answer, which is, have faith and trust in God. Chapter 2, verse 2. The Lord answered me and said, write the vision. And make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. God, just be patient. God's going to deal with those people. God will straighten them out. God will send judgment upon them. You just keep on and wait. Verse 4, behold, his soul which is lifted up is not right upright in him. Yes, I know he's wrong, but the just shall live by his faith. The just shall live by faith. You may not understand why these things are happening, but just trust God. Oh, their judgment may be a long ways off, and you may wonder why doesn't God do something, but you just wait. Trust God. It may not make sense to you. You may not understand why God is doing things the way he's doing them. You just live by faith in God. You may not live to see an answer to your concerns. You just live by faith in God anyway. Live by faith. Faith. God has a reason for what he's doing. God has a purpose for what he's doing. God has a program for what he's doing. We may not understand it, but God still knows what he's doing, and there's where our faith must rest in him. You see, that's the real answer. The things you don't understand in your life. That's the real answer to you when you don't understand why these things are happening to you. That's the real answer when things just don't look right to you. You just live by faith in God, that God does know what he's doing and why he's doing it. So Habakkuk raised the question, and he got the answer. And then we notice, thirdly, in this book, his response to God's answer. Chapter 3. His response to God's answer. Chapter 3, verse 1. A prayer of Habakkuk the prophet upon Shigionot. Well, that's some kind of musical instrument. In other words, what Habakkuk did after he started to understand God's answer and God's program was, he sang a song. Now, that's always a good thing to do, you know. You get real low and defeated and discouraged, sing. Sing one of the great songs of the faith. Sing one of the great songs that are a blessing to you. And in this song, first of all, he prayed. Verse 2. O Lord, I have heard thy speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make known in wrath, remember mercy. Lord, I see that what you're doing is not what I like. Just, Lord, help us. Be merciful to us. Revive us. Keep us from fainting. Keep us from giving up. You know, sometimes you get in a place where you're just kind of wrestling with God, arguing with God. You see how hard it is and how difficult it is. You need to pray for God's help. Lord, just revive me. Give me the strength to go on. And then there was a recognition of God's program. Chapter 3, verse 3. It says, God came from Teman, and the Holy One from Mount Paran. His glory covered the heavens, and the earth was full of his praise, and his brightness was as the light. He had horns coming out of his hand, and there was the hiding of his power. Before him went the pestilence, and burning coals went forth at his feet. He stood and measured the earth. He beheld and drove asunder the nations, and the everlasting mountains were scattered. The perpetual hills did bow. His ways are everlasting. Oh, he sees this vision of the power of God coming. God coming in his power. Verse 10. The mountains saw thee, and they trembled. The overflowing of the water passed by. The deep uttered his voice and lifted up his hands on high. The sun and moon stood still in their habitation. At the light of thine arrows they went, and at the shining of thy glittering spear. Thou didst march through the land in indignation. Thou didst thresh the heathen in anger. Thou wentest forth for the salvation of thy people, even for salvation with thine anointed. Thou woundest the head out of the house of the wicked by discovering the foundation under the neck. Oh, this prophetic picture of the coming of Messiah to establish His kingdom someday after the tribulation when the Lord comes back riding on that white horse and He defeats the nations and destroys the wicked, coming of God and His power. You see, Habakkuk realizes that God hasn't fallen asleep. God hasn't forgotten what's going on. God isn't getting negligent. But He's going forward. His program is going on. It's kind of like Elijah. Remember when Elijah was all discouraged and God came to him out there in that little cave on the mountain and says, Elijah, you go back and anoint a new king in Israel, and you anoint a new king in Syria, and you anoint a new prophet to take your place. I'm not done, Elijah. The program of God's still going on. You may get all perplexed about what's happening in this old world. You may get discouraged every time you read the newspapers, watch the TV. But don't forget, God's program's still going on. And God's still moving ahead. And so then, thirdly in this chapter, Habakkuk bowed in submission to God's program. Verse 16 says, "When I heard, my belly trembled, my lips quivered at thy voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he cometh up into the people, he will invade them with his troops." Habakkuk trembled when he realized what God was going to do. He waited. He submitted. He could see it coming. And maybe sometimes in your life, you can see some bad things coming. You see your job is coming to an end. You see that loved one's going to be taken from you. You see your health is starting to disappear. You see the awful thing coming. But you can submit to the program of God and wait and yield to Him. And then not only submission to God's program, but faith in God's program. Verse 17. Great passage. Verse 17, he looks at all the awful things that are going to happen. When the Babylonians invade, all the terrible things, how the land's going to be destroyed, how the crops are going to be ruined, how the farms are going to be destroyed, how the cities are going to be torn down. Did that finish him, discourage him? No, he says, verse 17, "Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the field shall yield no meat, the flock shall be cut off from the fold. There shall be no herd in the stalls." Oh, I see that day when all our crops are going to be ruined. Our cattle are going to be taken away. Our farms are going to be destroyed. The fruit trees are going to be torn down. And even though all those things happen, verse 18, yet, see it there? "Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and He will make my feet like hinds' feet, and He will make me to walk upon mine high places." You said, Habakkuk, if you see all those terrible things coming, how could you rejoice? How could you rejoice in God? Well, only one reason. Because Habakkuk had faith in God. And he knew that God knew what he was doing. He realized and believed that God has a plan. And God's plan is best. It may not be pleasant. It may be hard, but it's the best. And God would deal with the wicked. And beyond that judgment, there would someday be restoration. And beyond death, there'd be resurrection. And we ought to be able to look at things the same way. So even though we would see judgment coming, and even though the enemy would defeat us, we always must remember that God has a program. And God is carrying out His righteous judgments. And God will deal with the ungodly. And so no matter what comes, you just trust God. And look to the glory beyond and rejoice. As the songwriter said, "He hath sounded forth the trumpet, but shall never sound retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before His judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer Him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on." Shall we pray?